The life of Gustavus Adolphus. Gustav Adolphus and Elizabeth of England. Well, now we're going to start a little section where we look at how we get Gustav Adolphus a wife. Well, now, while he was still in his cradle, his mother, as a custom was in those days, arranged for the casting of his horoscope in accordance with the relative positions of the heavenly bodies at the hour of his birth. This nativity, which was kept secret from the world at large, contained, amongst other things, particularly explicit prophecies concerning the date of his marriage and his personal reactions to matrimony. When Gustav Adolf had reached the age of 25, he was to take a bride of his own choosing, regardless of the opinions and preferences of others. We have the information from Queen Christina herself. For the beginning of 1615, she let one of her confidential servants into the secret. The young prince's parents had, however, no intentions of allowing their respect for the science of astrology to deter them from concerning themselves with his future marriage. As early as 1605, we find his name mentioned in connection with political schemes designed to give increased security to the younger branch of the House of Vasa in the legitimate occupation of the Swedish throne. Karl IX would have been best pleased if his son could have married an English princess, though he also turned his thoughts from time to time to the princely houses of Saxony, Brandenburg, Württemberg. The advantages of a dynastic union with the leading Protestant power in Europe was obvious, and Karl did not abandon hope that one day such a union might be realized. From other points of view, moreover, James I's only daughter, Elizabeth, might seem to be a desirable match. She was rather younger than Gustav Adolf and had considerable personal attraction. Karl had taken soundings in London and obtained the impression that the English was not against the idea of such a marriage. This impression was not shaken by the reports of Johann Steit and Gustav Stenbock, who had an opportunity to prosecute inquiries into the course of their embassy in England in the summer of 1610. The charming young princess, in the opinion of these Swedish visitors, showed clearly that she was more inclined to Duke Gustav than any other prince in the world. On the whole, there seemed every reason to expect a gratifying success from the affair. The embassy had indeed apparently no formal commission to propose the suit, but the English interpreted their too lively interest as a request for the hands of Elizabeth on behalf of the heir to the Swedish throne. Shortly after their departure, moreover, James I informed his brother-in-law in Denmark that King Karl of Sweden had proposed a marriage between his son and James's daughter, and had even declared himself prepared to make considerable sacrifices to obtain it. Thorny problem with regard to young Elizabeth's marriage was whether it would be possible to secure a husband of the correct religion and sufficiently exalted rank. Apart from Gustavus Adolphus, or Gustav Adolf, there was in fact no Protestant prince of royal parentage available, and it was only with extreme reluctance that James could contemplate the wedding of his daughter to a papist. Karl IX's position was certainly hardly on par with that of a legitimate monarch, but was not an insuperable obstacle. Upon the visit of the Swedish embassy in 1610, James declared he was willing to recognize him as King of Sweden in virtue of the choice of the estates. It is probable that he then projected marriage in his mind. However, the scheme met with strong opposition from his queen, Anne of Denmark, sister of Christian IV, and who was anything but well disposed toward Sweden. The scruples which she entertained soon derived increased weight from subsequent developments in the relations between the two northern nations. The War of Kalmar put a stop to the whole project. It doesn't seem to have been followed up even from the Swedish side. Other suitors for Elizabeth's hand appeared in rapid succession. While in his own country, Gustav Adolf was running from battlefield to battlefield, Elizabeth was celebrating her betrothal to Frederick V of the Palatinate. The union later became warmly recommended by Christian IV, but it was less agreeable to the Queen Anne, who would have preferred to see her daughter Queen of Spain. But the whole of Puritan England held such a union in abhorrence and counted on the James for righteousness that he had in his matter steered clear of a clear anti-papist court. The Palatinate was generally considered to be the home of the most resolute section of Protestantism. The young elector was still under the tutelage of his guardians, but already there were many who speculated on the chances of his acquiring the crown of Bohemia. This hope may or may not have told in favor in England, but all the events it was not disappointed. For in 1619, the Bohemians, in a revolt against the House of Habsburgs, chose the Elector as their king. The Battle of White Mountain brought his reign to an abrupt conclusion under circumstances which have become familiar, and it was not long before the Palatinate was also wrested from him, so that the bride of the Winter King became for her countrymen the martyr par excellence for the Protestant cause. Through all of her checkered career, she never succeeded in meeting Gustav Adolf. But the youngest son of the exiled pair, born in The Hague, 1632, was by her desire given the name of the Swedish king in baptism. Frederick had wished to call him after their firstborn, a youth of promise who had been drowned some years earlier, but Elizabeth had her way. Her weak state of health prevented her from accompanying her husband when he paid a hopeful visit to Gustav Adolf's headquarters about the same time. She never saw him again alive. Some days later, after the Battle of Lützen, Frederick of Palatinate followed his protector to the grave. Elizabeth lived on for three adventurous decades, and little Gustav Adolf survived, unfortunately, for only 9 years. So, no luck with England. We'll see if we can find him one next time. The sources for this are Gustavus Adolphus versus Wallenstein by Pike, Gustav Adolphus Sweden and the 30 Years' War, 1630-32 by Volk, The Lion of the North by Henty, Gustav Adolphus the Great by Onlund, and Gustav Adolphus and the Rise of Sweden by Roberts, Gustav Adolphus's Army, Part 1, Infantry, by Brzezinski, Gustav Adolphus's Army, Part 2, Cavalry, by Brzezinski. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise. If you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.